The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Hi, everybody. Wait, let me get up a minute. 1 second. Yeah, I listen to Nicole Sandler. Is it time for the Nicole Sandler show? I forgot to turn the computer on. Let me just walk over here and I'll boot up my computer because I don't want... Oh, crap, I just... Never mind, it's okay, I got another one.
Oh, man.
Leave it there, the cat will get it. Got a little tune here, a little song to sing for you. That Nicole, she does something. She's really there.
Something.
And does things.
Whatever it is.
The Nicole Sandler Show.
All right. Thank you. Gee, thanks so much for that warm introduction. Well, welcome to a Wednesday, everybody. I am Nicole Sandler. I am more prepared than our announcer would lead you to believe. And we have a busy show for you today. You know, the Florida legislative session is in full swing. In fact, they just passed the midway mark. So we have a special guest coming aboard. If you've been listening to this program for any amount of time, you know our friend Deborah Newell Tornello. She's a fellow Floridian, and we used to do this segment. We exposed the Florida man. The thing is, now the Florida man is in the House. Actually, he's in the governor's mansion, believe it or not. So I'm going to check in with Deborah. We've got so much to talk about. But before we get to Deborah, I need to tell you about something that I actually teased a little bit earlier in the week. And that is a really important event is coming to South Florida the end of March. And I'm telling you about it now because they need volunteers. So if you are in South Florida or in other parts of the country where these medical expeditions are taking place, it'll all come crystal clear in a moment. I taped a conversation a little earlier this morning with our guests, so let's just get to it now, shall we? Because we can, and let's hope it works. Take it away, the power of videotape. Joining me on the line now is Heather Rhodes, who is working with Remote Area Medical, doing medical expeditions. Now, I first learned of Remote Area Medical, many years ago. I'm an old timer at this. And Stan Brock, who is the founder of the group, came on my show back in the Air America days to talk about these medical expeditions that he used to do, as the name implies, to remote areas of the planet where they didn't have access to medical care. And here we are now, and while Stan was still alive, Remote Area Medical started doing these expeditions here in the U.S., where you wouldn't think a remote area medical expedition team would need to set up shop to help people. But here in the United States, we do need that kind of help. So Stan Brock passed away a few years ago, and I hadn't heard much about the group. And then I got an email a week or two ago saying that one of these medical expeditions was coming to Fort Lauderdale, Florida.
Very excited to be going to Fort Lauderdale.
Wow. And I live in a suburb of Fort Lauderdale, and we shouldn't need something like this, but the fact is we do. So tell us, Heather, what is going to happen here in Fort Lauderdale? It's going to be the weekend of March 26th and 27th?
Yes, it's going to be the weekend of March 26th and 27th. Our protocols and our setup has changed a little bit since COVID. Obviously, we had to adapt to the new environment. So we took about 6 months downtime when COVID first hit, and we redid all of our protocols and everything to keep everybody safe. So if you went to a clinic before COVID, it'll look a lot different, but you're still going to get the same high quality health care you always have.
Now, I don't think you've been to Florida before. So for those who are not familiar with what you do, and do you still call them medical expeditions?
Yes, this year will actually be our second year at Fort Lauderdale. We were lucky enough to be invited back again this year by the Mount Olivet Seventh-day Adventist Church. They are hosting us this year again. We're very thankful to be partnered with them to bring free medical, dental, and vision to the Fort Lauderdale area. We're going to be setting up at Joseph C. Carter Park, which is on Sunrise Boulevard right there in Fort Lauderdale. We'll have dental tents set up inside the gym there. So it'll be like your own private little dental bay. We'll have vision areas set up so everybody can get free exams, free glasses. If you've already got a prescription, we'll be able to fill that for you. We'll be making glasses on site.
Wow.
And also we're going to have some medical teams there to do some general medical and women's health exams.
So now, what are the requirements? Say somebody, you know, does not have health care. They need everything done. How does it work?
Well, we ask that anybody pick either vision or dental for their main primary service.
Okay.
And once you get those, you know, we encourage everybody to go through medical because medical, everybody needs it. No matter how healthy you think you are, you're not quite that healthy. Mm-hmm. Everybody can use a yearly checkup. So come get your checkup. There are no requirements, no ID required, no income requirements, no nothing. All we ask for is time, patience, and understanding. And if we've taken great care of you, say thank you. And of course, give our host group, the Mount Olivet Seventh-day Adventist Church, a thank you and a, you know, for inviting us.
Absolutely. Now, so again, with this call today, you're not looking to get people signed up to get services at the clinic. We'll do that as you get closer to the end of March. Right now, what you're looking for are volunteers, right?
Yes, we always need volunteers for all of our expeditions. We use general volunteers to help us with everything from registering patients to helping patients get to where they need to go. We need providers, eye doctors, optometrists, ophthalmologists, opticians, dentists, oral surgeons, medical doctors, all of those. We can use anybody. There's always a job that needs to be done at a clinic.
So who do you bring with you? Who travels from, you know, goes to city to do this? And who do you draw upon from the local community?
We have what we call a core group of volunteers that are trained in our procedures and our policies. And they travel with us, and they're from all over the world, too. So we have some from California. We have some from New York. We have volunteers from all over. Those core volunteers have been specially trained, so they come and help run an area of the clinic. And, you know, we couldn't do it without them. And, of course, we can't do it without the locals to help, too, because, like I said, we always need local support.
So you're looking for everybody from any healthcare field. Mm-hmm. You need doctors, nurses, dentists, dental hygienists, I'm sure,
yes.
Vision, optometrists, maybe mm-hmm. an ophthalmologist, people who can make glasses. So you do this in each city you go to. And we're talking now the clinic that's going to happen in Fort Lauderdale, March 26th to 27th. Now, we've got a lot of listeners, you know, in other places. Are there others planned in other cities that you can tell us about now as well?
Oh, our schedule is always updating. We only go where we're invited. You can see our schedule. We keep it just as live and up to date as possible. It's on our website, ramusa.org.
Okay.
And there's a little red button at the top that says schedule, and it'll tell you everywhere we're going.
Wow. You know, I'm sure you know the history. I probably was interviewing Stan Brock before you ever were aware that RAM USA existed. But there's a great story. There's a man who is a hero that I think, even though some people don't know who he is, his name is Wendell Potter. And Wendell Potter, back over a decade ago, was the head, I was about to say propagandist, but he was the main PR guy for the for-profit health insurance industry. Mm-hmm. And it was his job to debunk any warnings about how the industry works, or in this case, actually doesn't mm-hmm. work. And he happened upon one of Stan Brock's remote area medical expeditions in Tennessee, and it was like a light bulb went off in his head. He became the one and only whistleblower to come forward to spill the beans about the for-profit health insurance industry, which I call government-sanctioned extortion, but that's besides the point. But this really was the impetus that caused Wendell Potter to change from the dark side to the good side. So he credits remote area medical for that. And so the organization took a little bit of a break after Stan's passing and then reformed, or what happened? Do we know?
No, we didn't. Stan set us up for success and gave us a great model to work with. And he had us ready to go. He knew he was getting a little bit older, and he knew that, you know, like all of us, our time on here on Earth is limited. So he had us a game plan, and we're just working off of his game plan. So it's thankful to him and our board members and our staff and all that we're able to continue doing our expeditions and taking care of the communities like we are.
It's so great. I love that you do this. And by the way, I just pulled up the website. It's ramusa.org. And up there in the upper right-hand corner, just as you said, clinic schedule. And the first one on the schedule is just this weekend in Knoxville, Tennessee. Then in March, you have Cookeville, Tennessee, and Fort Lauderdale. In April, you've got Ashtabula, Ohio, and Philadelphia, and Gadsden, Alabama. So you got three going on in April. Then you go to Henderson, North Carolina, Emory, Virginia, Jellicoe, Tennessee, and Charleston, West Virginia are all on the schedule. Now, if a community wants you guys to come, they can contact you and say, please come and help us?
Oh, yes. If someone wants to be what we call a host group, there is also a button on there that says, bring RAM to your community. Mm-hmm. And that starts the process. The process can take anywhere from 12 to 18 months from the initial contact phase till the clinic actually happening. So the sooner the better. And of course, you know, with our setup and our model that we use now, we help you do everything. We walk you through step by step on how to do a clinic, and we're here to support and help any way we can.
Great. Now, I just clicked on the box that says volunteer. So if somebody's here in South Florida and wants to participate and volunteer at the clinics March 26th and 27th, that's the way to do it. Go on the website and fill out the volunteer information. Now, do you also need people who maybe aren't in the healthcare professionals but still want to help?
We use any and all volunteers. We've got volunteers that they're original, I guess, paying gig is anything from mechanics to, you know, just the layperson that you know, works at McDonald's. Anybody that wants to give of their time and their energy, we're great with. We can get, you know, everything done. The biggest thing we need for right now for the Fort Lauderdale clinic, though, is some Spanish and Creole volunteers to help interpret.
Oh, yeah.
We don't want a language barrier to interfere with anybody's care. So if there's any interpreters out there that can help us with Spanish and Creole, please go to the volunteer button and sign up. We can definitely use you.
Oh, you definitely will need them, because Spanish and Creole are very common languages here. Now, the last thing is, you're a family, you got some young kids, you all need to see a doctor. When do you start? Do you take reservations, or do you just show up, or how does that work?
Everything is done on a first come, first serve basis. So our parking lot will open up no later than midnight on our setup day. And once our parking lot opens up, everybody will be given a ticketed number, just like a
concert or something.
Yeah, concert tickets or something like that. Everybody gets a number. You pick which service you want, and then we open the doors at 6 a.m.
So you anticipate probably people will start lining up at midnight on the night before, March 25th.
Yes, or earlier.
Or earlier. Wow.
Yes.
But they can't get into the parking lot before midnight.
Well, the park has some events scheduled for the day before, which would be the 25th. Uh-huh. And as soon as their events are done, which should be about 10 o'clock at night, then we will be able to use the parking lots for our expedition.
I see. Well, I have a feeling it's going to be very busy. I wasn't aware the first time you did it. So I'm excited that you're coming, because every town in this country needs something like this. It's a shame. We shouldn't need it. We should have health care as a basic human right, as most other advanced nations around the world have, but we don't. So you are providing an amazing service. Heather, I can't thank you enough. I hope we'll talk again as we get closer to the event and let people know what's happening. But right now, the call is out because you need volunteers, especially translators, Spanish, Creole, translators, healthcare professionals, and anybody else who just wants to help out.
Yes.
Awesome.
Yes. Last year we were able to help 259 people at this event. So hopefully we'll be able to help even more. And we need those volunteers to help those people.
Without a doubt. All right. Heather Rhodes from Remote Area Medical USA. The website is ramusa.org. Go there if you're down here and can volunteer. Thank you so much, Heather. I thank you so much for keeping this going. This is a really special program, and it's really important.
We're honored to be able to do this in Stan's name.
So there you go. I had that conversation with Heather Rhodes this morning because she's kind of busy setting these things up. The other thing I did was then go back, and because my archives go back a long ways. And I found the first time I spoke with Stan Brock, it was on Air America Radio. The date was July 28th, 2009. So we are talking a while ago. Let me just play for you the first few minutes of the first time we spoke, because my God, he was a fascinating man, and I think you'll appreciate this.
I'm thrilled about our next guest. On the phone with me is Stan Brock. He is the founder of an organization known as RAM, which stands for Remote Area Medical. But Stan, now you're not a doctor, right?
No. I'm just the person who sort of came up with this idea many, many, many years ago under rather strange circumstances. And I've now done 575 of these special operations.
Wow. Now, I came to learn of you through two different TV shows that I saw. One was a profile on what you do on 60 Minutes that I believe was last year sometime. And most recently, RAM was mentioned by a man named Wendell Potter, who was an executive with Cigna Health Insurance Company, who basically came over to the good side, I would say, after seeing one of your health fairs in Virginia last year. And he talked about it with
Tennessee.
Bill Moyers a couple of weeks ago. And I guess that was the turning point for him in the realization that the work he was doing for the insurance company was not really helping people get well. So I guess I want to back up with you and find out. Now, we know you. You were the co-host and associate producer of NBC's Wild Kingdom on television back when I was much younger, weren't you?
Well, yes, that was sort of the frivolous era, you know, going around the world, capturing and releasing wild animals. And that was me. Don't do that anymore.
Uh-huh. And how did you make the transition from that world to this? How did you come up with the idea of RAM, of Remote Area Medical Volunteer Corps?
Well, actually, you really could remove the Wild Kingdom part of it from the equation, because although I'm certainly proud of the success of that program and the fact that people could still come up to me today and say things like, you know, I grew up watching you on Wild Kingdom, and that's why I decided to become a marine biologist or a veterinarian. So,
wow.
You know, all of that, of course, is very nice to hear. But before that, when I was just a youngster, I was living with a tribe of Native Americans in the upper Amazon region, the northern border of Brazil and the southern border of what was then British Guiana. And it was a very wild and remote area, but it was populated by vast numbers, like, you know, 30, 40, 50,000 head of wild longhorn cattle and wild horses, and that would have been left over from the Spanish conquistador era. So in other words, it was a sort of wild and woolly cattle ranch, so to speak, and we had to capture these animals. I was a young cowboy there, and all the cowboys were Indians, except me. And I had a very bad accident when I was just a youngster with a wild horse and got sort of smashed up. And one of the Wapishanas said in the native language, well, the nearest doctor's 26 days on foot from here.
Oh, wow.
So it was about that time that I decided it might be a good idea to bring those doctors a little bit closer. And anyway, I wasn't successful at that at the time. But then many years later, after living in that area where there was no health care, I was brought up here to the United States to do the Wild Kingdom series. But I'd always wanted to take doctors to that particular part of the world to provide medical care for the Wapishanas. And so after the Wild Kingdom and several really bad movies that I made, I founded Remote Area Medical, otherwise known as RAM. And now we have a year-round program down there in that part of the upper Amazon where things have much improved. But tangentially to that, we started getting requests for help here in the United States.
Go figure.
And other countries. And so we started doing it here in America. And now it's 64% of everything we do is right here on the home front, because the need is so great.
Well, that was, I'm cutting it off here. That was back in 2009 when I first spoke with Stan Brock and was so impressed with this organization, Remote Area Medical. I interviewed him a number of times over the years and saw these, what they call health expeditions being put on all around the country. And the lines of people that show up to get an exam, to see a doctor, is just astounding. And so when I got the press release that they're doing one here in Fort Lauderdale, I thought, I need to help them. I want to help in any way I can to get the word out. That's why I spoke with Heather this morning for the first piece we showed. Stan Brock, again, Wild Kingdom. I kind of remember that from when I was a kid. And he was just such, everyone I've spoken to who knew Stan Brock have the same impression of him. What an amazing man. So I did, I think, three interviews with him back in those Air America days. I'll post one or two of them. I'll link them on the blog today at NicoleSandler.com/2-9-22. That's how I post the show every day. And you can listen if you like. But just be aware that one of these remote area medical expeditions could be coming to your town or a town near you. And if you would like to arrange for them to come, they only go if they're invited. So you can work with your town and invite them there to do one of them. They are a nonprofit. And I'm so glad that he kept it going after, well, he arranged for it to keep going after he died. Mark of a truly magnanimous person. All right, so we're going to go from one extreme to the other. There's a really, an epic example of a human being, somebody who does for others without thinking twice about it. Now I'm going to bring you to where I live, Florida. And, well, we've got a little song for you about Florida, produced by our friend Boca Brittany Summers. Everybody sing.
Boy, Florida, the deadbeat's paradise. Only good for a quick visit or to die. Rotting man. Grove swamps, inhale all you want, and pass out from just one whiff. Old and cranky Jews, angry Cubans who welcome you with the shaking fist. And
watch you die to Canada, where the air is cool and the soda is dry.
The soda is dry. I don't know, but you know, if you've ever been to a restaurant in Miami Beach or even Boca Raton with the old people, they'll ask for things like that. I want a dry soda. Anyway,
I think they're saying Canada Dry.
Oh, it's duh. Hello. And that voice you hear is our friend Deborah Newell Tornello. Hey, Deb, how are you?
Hi. Doing well, thank you. So, Happy New Year, belatedly.
Wow, yes, because we haven't spoken. So, Deborah is, you know, you serve two purposes here today. Well, more than that. I mean, I'm glad to see you. It's been a while. But Deborah is a fellow Floridian who lives on in the Tampa Bay area, so on the west coast of Florida. Yeah. And but also now splits her time between Florida and Canada. So that theme song worked perfectly for you.
Awesome. Love it.
And I was explaining at the top of the show that you used to come on. We used to do a Florida Man segment where, you know, there's no lack of stories about that, you know,
And Florida woman.
And Florida woman. Florida people. I used to say it's not the heat, it's the humidity that turns your brain to mush. So
it's not the heat, it's the stupidity.
It's the stupidity and the humidity. So a couple of things going on. That, you know, yesterday when Laffy was here, we actually called Canada. We called Ottawa. You know, I do this thing where occasionally I'll call around the world when there's something going on in a certain place. I called a hotel in Tahrir Square when the Arab Spring began. I think I called Iran during the last round of scariness.
You get people to talk to you over the place.
Yeah, but the thing is, when you call, it's just a human being talking to a human being, and people are pretty, you know, open. One of my favorite calls of all time was to, you know, I call a lot of hotels in other parts of the world because generally people there will speak English, whoever answers the phone. So I called Tel Aviv when the first time Netanyahu, it looked like he lost the election, to see if they were as excited as I was that we were going to be rid of Netanyahu. And it took a few more elections to finally get him out of there. But this hotel clerk in Tel Aviv was so great. I hope she didn't lose her job or anything because she was very open. So anyway, I like doing that. So I called this vape shop in Ottawa. I like the name. You know, I pulled up a map of downtown Ottawa, and it was Sir Vapes a Lot. And Wyatt answered, and he was just this charming guy. But I think Wyatt spends too much time in the shop. And I guess they were a few blocks away from the actual downtown area where things are shut down, because he was like, no big deal. It's not much is happening here. Everything's fine. But things are still kind of crazy there.
Yes. It depends who you talk to. Mm-hmm. It really does.
And where they are. So apparently a few blocks closer to Canadian Parliament is where it is shut down. And then today I saw the news reports, I think it's the Ambassador Bridge, it's called, from Detroit over to Ontario.
Right. The border crossing
is shut down. And then there's another one between Montana and Canada, wherever it crosses into Canada, that they've shut that down too. It's these truckers doing this protesting vaccine mandates, protesting the measures put in place to protect us, frankly.
What they're protesting is it's mainly the truckers who are driving into the United States to bring back product or to take Canadian product to the U.S. When they come back into Canada, they are required to show proof of vaccination, and they don't like that. I have to add that they represent a small percentage of Canadian truck drivers. There are many, many Canadian truck drivers who are immigrants. Canada is a very diverse country, just like here. But a lot of the Canadian truck drivers are from somewhere else. And they have a very high vaccination rate. This is a small percentage who are extremely loud. I mean, boy, haven't we seen that happen?
Oh, yes, we have. And, you know, that's a perfect...
They're the ones causing the problem.
Right. And that's a perfect point to drill down on for just a moment. That's the same thing over here. The Trumpers, they're very loud. There are many more of us than there are of them. they're just louder and a lot more obnoxious.
And they make the news because they are loud and flamboyant and obnoxious, exactly.
Right. So the trick is to not get discouraged thinking that they outnumber us. They do not outnumber us. Yeah. We need an enthusiasm injection, which we don't have right now. But hopefully long before next November comes around, we'll have reason to be enthusiastic. I hope.
I hope this latest variant, Omicron, and now there's stealth Omicron.
And it has been identified in Florida.
Of course, you know.
You know, just when you think. And so we have governors around the country, and we're not talking about our guy here yet, Death Satan, which is my new nickname for him. It used to be Death Sentence, and now it's just Death Satan because he is. You know, he just eschewed, is that the right word? All precautions. We got to talk about his joke of a surgeon general who is, I believe, today being confirmed by the Florida legislature, by the Florida Senate, which is just, it defies logic.
He's from a med school in California, correct? And I think,
believe it or not, he graduated from Harvard.
Oh, Harvard. Okay, but they're denying that he was part of all these different studies.
That's UCLA, though. He worked at UCLA you got it right. After graduating from Harvard, he allegedly worked at UCLA, and he said he treated, you know, COVID. He was on the first, you know, first responders in COVID.
On the front lines, and
the COVID responders there are going, if he worked here, it wasn't with us. We don't know this guy, and he doesn't represent us, and he doesn't speak for us. He's fucking nuts, is basically
what
they said.
I mean, that alone should disqualify him from a public position, much less be the Surgeon General of the state.
No.
To be lying about your background. What
right?
the hell?
It's
oh my God.
It's malpractice is what it is. And so he was named, DeSantis named him Surgeon General, but he still had to go through the confirmation process. And now the legislature is in session.
Right.
And so they had the hearing. So they had one last week, and you've probably seen video of him by now. He doesn't answer a question. He refuses to answer a question.
I saw Senator Lauren Book trying to ask him, do vaccinations work? And he was tap dancing and spinning and talking about anything but vaccinations. And she tried and tried and tried, and she was making a heroic effort and could not get the man to say, to even comment.
Anything. He wouldn't answer anything.
The other thing, as you probably have heard, this really pissed me off, was when he met, and I don't recall her name.
Her name is Tina Pulsky, a senator from
a breast cancer
Boca Raton. Yep.
And she's very concerned because she's still being treated, I believe, and so she didn't want to be around anyone not wearing a mask. She asked him to wear a mask in her office, and he refused.
Yep.
That's just common courtesy, and it's disgusting. And a surgeon general and someone with a medical degree would behave in this way.
It's sickening. It is sickening.
They're just shoving him in our faces just to own the libs, like everything else.
You're right. So you know, they had the one you mentioned, Lauren Book, who was, I guess, the head of the Florida, the Democrats in the Senate. And they, after they tried to get him to answer the question, are vaccines effective? It's a yes or no question. And he's, well, yes or no questions. That's the basis of science. And
starts with a Y.
Right.
And no starts with an N.
And she goes, you know what? We're just going to leave and we'll come back when there's something, you know, that we can actually do. The fact of the matter is, the way the makeup of the legislature is, they wouldn't have had any effect. I think there are 3 Democrats to 6 Republicans on this committee. So they're so outnumbered, it didn't matter. So the minute they left, they passed him out of committee and said, okay, let's move. So yesterday were the next hearings. And I went trying to find videotape of it, and it doesn't, there's nothing posted anywhere. I did find one news report from a station in West Palm Beach. I got to play this for you because just to see what the hell is going on here. You're going to love this, Deborah. So this is the CW station in West Palm.
Yeah, Jim, good evening. Hearings in Tallahassee rarely get this intense. Like you said, the future of the state's COVID response is really what's on the line here. And some of the toughest questions today coming from local lawmakers right here from Palm Beach County.
I do.
Florida's Surgeon General facing off against Democratic lawmakers tonight.
Our state's doctor, and I don't feel like any of us can trust him.
It was the last time Dr. Joseph Latipo will face questions before the Senate considers officially naming him as the state's top doctor. Already on the job as Surgeon General, Latipo doubled down today on his opposition to mask mandates and discouraged people from getting tested if they don't have COVID symptoms.
What discourage people from getting tested.
Been how some science has been ignored over the past 2 years when it hasn't fit an agenda.
Oh, my
and
God.
How opinions are that are different from the mainstream have been suppressed.
Republicans warning Democrats went too far, quote, hazing the doctor.
What?
So thank you, sir, for what you've endured during this process.
Opposite world.
Some of the toughest questions coming from Boca Raton Senator Tina Polsky.
This is Tina Polsky.
I have a question.
A cancer survivor.
Okay. Let's then ask a question, please.
We have the Surgeon General here saying that vaccines don't work.
Dr. Latipo clarifying he does believe vaccines help prevent hospitalization, but adds they're not as effective against catching COVID.
I do not equivocate with science.
We spoke with Senator Polsky.
Do not understand science.
He is not fit for this job. He didn't answer the questions properly. He doesn't ever want to take a stance on vaccines.
Is there a potential that all of this is political sport? Democrats trying to make some political hay out of the Surgeon General?
It was incumbent upon us, the Democrats, to ask the questions, because if not us, they would have just rolled over and confirmed him without
they did anyway. They
questioning
are today.
Whatsoever.
Yeah, here's the thing, Liz and Jim. Democrats can oppose this nomination all they want, and they likely will. But Dr. Latipo is on track to be confirmed. Republicans control the state Senate, and they have a significant majority, and he has the full support of all of the Republicans and people like Governor DeSantis, guys.
Lucky us. All right. So the stupidity is just astounding, and there's nothing we could do about it. This guy, do you remember, Deborah? What were they called? The American, what did they call themselves? Remember there was a group of doctors led by one in particular who were promoting hydroxychloroquine.
And the one who said, do you have sex with demons in
yes.
your dreams? And,
yes.
Yeah.
He was part of that group. He was standing behind that woman when they had that press conference. That's who this guy is. That's
right,
who
right.
Moron Death Satan wants to be Florida's Surgeon General, and they're gonna approve him today. Right.
What can we do about it? You know, they tell us you just need to vote. You just need to vote. Well, I've been voting until my fingers bleed.
Actually, you know. So, Deborah, we should mention. You notice Deborah's got a little bit of an accent. It's okay. So you actually been living here for many many years, but you only just became a citizen so you could vote for Bernie Sanders.
Yeah, 2016.
Yes. And
I always said, well, you know, when I first became kind of political and I saw him first when he was a congressman and then a senator. And I said, if he ever runs for president, I'll become a citizen. And when he announced back in 2015, I filed the next day.
You did.
And then I got sworn in January. And voted for him, donated it to the, you know, as much as I could. The second time around, I actually was up in Canada. I flew down to New Hampshire to knock on doors. And I've told this story before, but having volunteered for President Obama back in the day when I couldn't vote for him, but I could still volunteer for him back in 2008, there were, you know, Americans volunteering. But in New Hampshire, there were people who so strongly believed that Bernie would be good for the U.S. They flew in from Spain, from Australia, from Toronto. They couldn't vote, but they wanted to help. And they wanted to just, you know, drive people to knock on doors or hand out campaign brochures, do anything to help. And it was, I've never seen anything like it. The campaign headquarters, you could hear 3, 4, 5 different languages being
wow.
spoken. It was amazing, and the effort and the support and that was there, and it broke my heart 2 times in a row.
Yes, mine too. But now we're dealing with this state that we both somehow live in. Yeah. So I got to show you one thing. Oh my God! So this guy, death sentence. It's just so reprehensible. I want to show you one thing. You know, on the left, we have Act Blue. Any candidate that you donate money to, it goes through this organization, this Act Blue, because they collect the money and they dole it out and they do it very efficiently.
It's very easy to donate.
It really is. And it's great. In fact, Howie Klein's Blue America, they don't even collect any money. They just do it all through Act Blue and it goes right to the candidate that you choose to donate to. Very clean. So the Republicans try to imitate it, and they did this Win Red. But they're having all kinds of problems. But so what they do with Win Red, they allow these Republicans to put up a storefront to raise money. So I pulled up more on death sentences storefront. Let's take a look at it, shall we? Look what you can buy on Ron DeSantis's storefront. First of all, he's hijacking the alligator. I guess that's his logo. Is that what he wants to identify himself with? Let us alone.
School mascot. Yeah.
Let us alone is what stands out. Keep Florida free. And he's got
not even grammatical. It should be leave us alone.
I know, right? Everything about it is wrong. But wait, it gets better. So let us alone. Keep Florida free. I got to say, if he was trying to get people to, you know, vote for him, that's not going to help. It doesn't have his name on it, but that's okay. Keep at it. You do you, Ron. But let's keep going. So he's got these camouflage hats and the DeSantis koozies, white beverage coolers and bumper stickers. Again, there's a little DeSantis logo on the bottom. But when you keep going, oh, it gets better. There are flip-flops, you know, because Florida beach. And on the top, it says DeSantis. But on the bottom, it says, Fauci can pound sand.
Oh, my God.
And then the next one is escape to Florida and the lockdown libs. And so this is like he's promoting come to Florida to get away from the liberals. And then the next one is one of those beverage cooler things that says, don't Fauci my Florida. Are you kidding me? And then never, ever back down. Truck, yeah, this is what he's putting out there. This is, this is DeSantis's, it's disgusting, right? Don't Fauci my Florida? Excuse me, Anthony Fauci, I think, is a national hero. He's been working to protect us from virulent diseases for decades. He's served with, I think, 6 presidents. This is reprehensible, but that's their MO, is they try to make someone a villain.
Expected all over the world, except in red states like right. ours, unfortunately. Right. One of my neighbors is an epidemiologist up in Quebec. He is very well respected. And I mean, the man's education is... He has more brains in his tiny tail than all these people in Tallahassee stacked up on top of each other.
Right, but that's what they do, is they name call.
You can disagree with people, but that's just vile.
It's vile. That's how they are.
He even said, when you probably saw when Rand Paul started in on him on the most recent congressional floor in when they were questioning him, and Rand Paul started in, and he was prepared. He had printed out some screenshots of the things from Rand Paul's website raising money off of Dr. Fauci.
That's
and then, you know, this man and da da da. And he said, as a result, you know, I had to hire basically private security for my wife so she can go to the grocery store without being harassed. And you know, people harass my children, my family, me, all because
they're getting death threats. He has to have round the clock security because these people are trying to vilify him for simply being a medical expert and trying to keep us safe in a global pandemic. It's astounding how they vilify everyone else, but never take any blame for anything. I figured instead of Florida man today, we could just talk about some of the stuff that they're pushing through in this legislative session that's going on. And again, They just passed the halfway mark. And what is happening is just astounding. You know, I've got more stuff on the group was America's Frontline Doctors. That was the name of that group. And he was one of them. So I have the Tina Polsky story. We already kind of did that. But you'll love this. Another one of those America's Frontline Doctors, Simone Gold, she was the founder. She was one of the people charged with breaking into the U.S. Capitol on January 6th.
Get out. Oh, my God.
Stella Emanuel, another group member, has a history of making outlandish medical claims, including that genealogical problems are, this is the one, caused by sex with demons in dreams.
What do you say to that?
Really, that you're fucking nuts and, you know, you should make an appointment with a psychiatrist.
That's...
Right? And can I tell you what else is disgusting? So Latipo, yes, is a graduate of Harvard Medical School and worked as a physician and researcher at UCLA before death sentence named him Surgeon General. He also serves as a professor, are you sitting down, at the University of Florida, your alma mater. Guess how much money this man is bilking the state of Florida for?
I can't guess.
For those two jobs, Deborah, your tax dollars and mine are paying him $437,000 annually for his dual roles as a UF professor and Surgeon General.
And UF is fine with this? I mean,
I have no idea. I have no idea. So yesterday, once again, in the second and final of the hearings for his confirmation, he declined to disclose whether or not he has received a vaccine against coronavirus. During a contentious confirmation hearing where Democrats pressed the state's top doctor to promote the shots. On Tuesday, Democrats grew visibly frustrated with Latipo, accusing him of evading questions and endangering public health through what they described as a laissez-faire approach to vaccines.
Yeah.
Lovely. So there's that. So you put that aside. Then one of the bills which advanced yesterday out of its committee is known euphemistically as the Don't Say Gay Bill.
Oh, yeah. Sick.
You've heard about this one, right? Well, yes. You have. The proposed law would ban discussion of sexual orientation and gender identity in Florida public schools in primary grade levels or in any manner that is not, quote, age appropriate. What? But Joe Biden actually spoke out on this yesterday. He tweeted, I want every member of the LGBTQ+ community, especially the kids who will be impacted by this hateful bill, to know that you are loved and accepted as you are. I have your back. And this, he tweeted that after DeSantis said it was entirely, this is a quote, entirely inappropriate for teachers to talk about gender identity and sexual orientation in the classroom.
I don't understand this. So there are children who have two moms or two dads.
That's right.
And
They're not allowed to do their weekend report on what I did this weekend with my two dads because, oops, that mentions homosexuality.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
I mean, this is naked pandering to the Bible thumpers.
That's right.
And you know what? To the whole Southern strategy stuff that we've been seeing now for decades. It's how they got these people to vote, because they're certainly not, for lack of a better phrase, the poor white Southern contingency under Lee Atwater, as you know, you remember. They're not going to vote against their own interests. But if you tell them that the Democrats will take away your guns and they will turn your daughter into a lesbian and your son, will be taking ballroom dancing and by the way, there's going to be free abortions on every corner, and their mind.
Speaking of abortion,
15
week abortion ban. You know what the hell? So that's working its way through the legislature. More about schools.
I'm surprised that they're not going toe to toe with Texas.
Oh, no, they're being generous. Oh, we're giving you 15 weeks. Wow. Yeah. That's mighty Christian of you.
I would imagine that it won't be long before they'll try to catch up with Texas. They take a lot of pride in being as red or redder.
Absolutely.
And certainly they are crazier than Arizona. So, you know,
right.
Florida.
But listen to this. It gets better. There are two health care bills. I'm doing the air quotes for those of you who are listening to an audio stream. One touted as the Vulnerable Child Protection Act would criminalize professionals who provide gender-affirming medical care to minors. So minor, that's anyone under the age of 18 who comes in and says, you know, I don't feel right in my body. Even like psychological counseling, this would criminalize medical professionals for doing that. The other would allow any medical professional the right to refuse treatment or procedures, including gender-affirming surgery or abortions on moral grounds. So a doctor can say, a doctor who would refuse medical treatment to somebody has any morals?
Unbelievable.
Yeah. And wait, there's
does
more.
Does that include pharmacists?
I believe so. So a pharmacist can refuse to fill your prescription for the morning after pill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or you know, for medical abortion pills.
Right. Well, that's what the morning after pill is, isn't it? It stops the egg from implanting.
Right. But there's also the abortion pill is, I believe, a two-pill regimen. There's the morning after, which has to be the morning after within a certain number of hours. And then there's another actual abortion pill, but
so a pharmacist can say I will not fill that here. Really? And they're saying that's okay. Then they talk about, you know, there are these other bills that are giving parents, it's the anti-woke, the Stop Woke Act. I actually have DeSantis talking about this one. Hold on, I'm not going to bring up his picture, but I'll bring up the audio. Listen to this shit.
You think about what MLK stood for. He said he didn't want people judged on the color of their skin, but on the content of their character.
Oh, my God. Talk about twisting the words.
You listen to some of these people nowadays, they don't talk about that.
He's got a sign on the podium that says Stop Woke Act, and he's invoking Martin Luther King to push this crap
out of your mouth, you know? That man was a socialist. He was an incredible speaker. He fought for people, and he died fighting for the least among us.
That's right. And this bastard has the nerve to use his name and to say he wanted us to. No, he said he had a dream that someday we would judge people on the content of their character and not the color of their skin. But that's not what they do. We're still not there yet because of idiots like him. So listen to this.
That's the only quote they know, by the way.
That's it. That's the only one. There were a number of montages put together by some of the TV shows that showed them, all of them invoking that quote, obviously not understanding what it meant. But then there's this. So with this Stop Woke Act, it's one of the things that they're talking about. They want to put cameras in the classrooms so that parents can keep tabs on what the teachers are teaching their kids. And if they don't like what the teachers are teaching their kids, it gives them a road to lawsuits to sue them.
Oh my God.
In a move to give parents more say over classroom curriculum and control of school libraries in Polk County this week, which is out sort of near you, education officials went from school to school pulling 16 books flagged by a conservative parents group as inappropriate, including Khalid Hosseini's 2003 bestseller, The Kite Runner. The Kite Runner, which I've read, which is a brilliant book about the plight of the Afghan people. And there's nothing inappropriate for children. It's just astounding. So they are now banning books.
They need to ban Lord of the Flies.
There's a whole list of them. It's in
the
books that I was required to read as a kid.
As to why. Why?
Because it's not the Bible, which is filled with violence and fiction and sex and murder and stuff.
Rape and
all that stuff. That's okay. I have others. Ron DeSantis has proposed the formation of a large and unprecedented state agency to investigate election crimes.
Oh, yeah.
In a
yeah.
state where there is little evidence of any voter fraud in the 2020 election or otherwise, except on behalf of Republicans. I think 4 people from the Villages were arrested for voting for dead people. They're all Republicans who voted for Trump. They're exactly. the ones who were busted, not any of us. In response, one prominent state prosecutor sought to tie DeSantis to right-wing conspiracy theorists, calling his proposal a solution in search of a problem, a $6 million door prize for a QAnon pep rally. Nonetheless, DeSantis, who has also proposed his own militia, wants state lawmakers to allocate $6 million to fund an Office of Election Crime and Security, which would have 52 staffers, including 45 investigators. There would be a central office in Tallahassee and investigators based throughout the state. Staffers in an office with a budget of more than $660,000 to acquire motor vehicles would refer election crimes to either the state attorney general or local prosecutors. There is no election crime. This is insane. He wants his own private militia, his own private police force that would report only to him and nobody else.
That was going to be my question. To whom do they report? To whom do they answer?
Him. To him.
Our tax dollars pay for this.
Right.
All this. My God.
Ron,
we have nothing else we need to spend money on.
Of course. But you know what? We apparently need police officers. So you know what death sentence did to get more cops down here to Florida?
Yep.
He offered
no vaccination, no mask.
Well, all those cops who were fired in other states for not adhering to the vaccine policy. He's saying he'll pay them each $5,000 to relocate to Florida. So we get them as cops. Aren't we lucky?
Wow.
It goes on and on. I've got more. I mean, it's just astounding.
I'm only laughing, though. I don't cry. This is horrible.
Right? I want the rest of the country to hear this because they're talking about, in the polling, if Donald Trump doesn't run, more on death sentences next is like number 2 in the polling.
Yep. Wake up, people.
Wake up,
people. He's the front runner.
Right. He was so against vaccine mandates that he put in a rule, because he's a dictator, and I guess he can just make rules and laws, that he was going to fine any county who instituted a vaccine mandate, fine them $5,000 for each employee that was told to abide by the mandate. So Leon County, that's Tallahassee, not a big county at all. It's Tallahassee. It's the capital of Florida. It's where Florida State University is. But aside from that, there's not much else there. It's Tallahassee. It's up near the panhandle. It's not a place you want to be. The state of Florida Department of Health fined Leon County $5,000 for each of their 714 employees that it asked to provide proof of vaccination by October 1st. The health department said 700 employees met the requirement, and the 14 employees who did not were terminated several days later. But it didn't matter because DeSantis said the state health department would continue to enforce the ban. They fined the county $5,000 for each of those 714 employees, whether they were vaccinated or not, for a total of $3.5 million in fines to Leon County, Florida. Because
So bear in mind, when I'm up north, they ask me about this, about these things, you know, and people are just... they're baffled. They, you know, Canada has, Quebec is a fairly left-leaning province, but even the more conservative Canadians mm-hmm. are genuinely baffled by our complete tossing public health concerns out the window. It just, the number of the deaths per 100,000 that we have here, we have close to 3 times the death rate in Florida that they have there in that country.
I believe now, it. Yes.
They're strict. They have some strict laws and they, you know, they institute crackdowns when certain numbers are hit and they, you know, they lift them when it goes down.
Mm-hmm.
But and people just are used to it. They wear masks in the grocery store. They show their, you show your phone, you show your vaccination card on,
right.
you know, on your phone. They have an app for it. God, we're not allowed to have that here. We
no.
can't have a,
oh, God,
can't
no.
have a vaccine passport. It would be so much easier, but okay. So, you know, I have a photo of my CDC card on my phone and I show that and they all know, you know, yes, Americans can show this. They don't have the little QC code because it's America. And for some reason, they think freedom means dying.
Yes, you're free to die. You're dead. Free to get COVID and die. But the other yeah. part is you're free to infect your neighbors because you have exactly. no responsibility to anybody else. But your freedom, ugh. Yeah.
But they are just genuinely, they don't understand why it got so politicized here. You know,
because of Donald Trump. Do they understand?
We wear coats when it's cold. We wear masks when there's a pandemic. Doesn't really matter whether you're a liberal or a conservative, but like, oh, that's not how it is here.
No, not at all. Not at all. It is really frustrating. So you, so Deborah, you and your husband, you have bought this house up in Quebec, right? You're way up there. I've seen pictures, and you were there once they opened the borders again and let Americans in, because you bought the house and then you were locked out. And then when they finally opened again, you went, and it was cold. Yeah. I was cold just looking at the pictures.
Oh, that was when they opened the border on August 9th. It wasn't cold then.
Okay.
Yeah. We flew up that very day, but we also went back up for Christmas.
Yes, that's when it was
cold. I mean, it can go into minus 20s Fahrenheit.
Yeah.
But they are ready for it. And the streets there, they have... The Canadians know how to manage snow. They are used to it. They have it. Their buildings are well insulated. Never cold in buildings. And you dress for it. You know, you wear a hat and a coat and you're fine.
Right. But
you will not. I mean, I'm sure there are plenty of incidences where people get stuck on highway, but they don't have that thing like they had in Virginia, where there were 40 miles of highway. For 24 hours, people trapped in their cars because they didn't have enough snow moving equipment to clear the exit ramps and get people away. So they're up there clearing the roads before you've had your first cup of coffee. So when it's had a snowy night, you know, you go out in the morning and the roads are already cleared.
So they've got it down to a science, because that's what they do.
And the same thing with the airports, the de-icing. Boy, have they got that down. They have these computerized de-icing machines that you can watch them from the window of the airport as they, you know, they're like robots and they go around and spray down all the wings. And then after a certain time, if the plane's still not cleared to take off, they de-ice them again. But they're unbelievably organized for winter, because they have to be. And then winter lasts most of the year. But
now let me ask you this. When you we're in overtime now, we said goodbye to the Progressive Voices Network, so now we're in overtime. So when you bought the house up there, did you have to apply to the Canadian government? Like Laffy, you know, got a laugh. They've been going through this process for 2 years now, and they were just approved for residency.
She's probably been in the pipeline to do that for years. It's during COVID, it got everything got put on hold. So she and her husband, probably, I'm imagining they
started it pre-COVID. Yeah.
Well in advance of COVID hitting. You know, no, you don't to buy property. You can
you
own property
buy.
There.
Right.
But if you are considered a visitor, so even if you own property and you can own it free and clear and it doesn't matter, you're not Canadian. But there's never been any problems in the past. This was the first time that they said, you know, no citizens, only citizens and only residents.
Oh, that's why you couldn't get in. But so with her residency, she actually, if she had it then, she would have been able to go.
If she had her residency, she could, permanent residents could come in. And they are, you know, if people go, I'm, you know, just going to take off and go move to Canada and become a Canadian. It's not quite that simple.
Right.
So it's a wonderful country, but it's not as easy as just declaring yourself a Canadian.
No, and a lot of people have found that out. But so you know, you can go up there and stay for a certain amount of time, and then you have to come back.
I think it's up to 6 months, and then you have to go back to the U.S. and then you can turn around
go
and
back
come
again.
Back. it's not a problem.
Right.
I mean, they're welcoming, and it's a country that's not terribly populous. So they need immigrants there. They like to have, and it's diverse. There's a lot of languages, especially in Montreal. I mean, you'll hear it. I mean, it's a French province and they speak French first, and the laws are quite strict on that front. But in the city, you'll hear English, of course. It's out in the other parts of the province where, you know, most people speak a little English, but some people don't speak any. So it helps to have a little French. But in the resort areas and in Montreal, people do tend to speak English. And there's also a lot of Italians, Chinese, Greeks, and on and on. You'll hear a lot of languages.
It's like a melting pot. And I so how we used to be described. And now the Trump party, they're not Republicans anymore. It's the party of Trump, I guess. They don't like that. They just want white people. Apparently. So,
well, they have, you know, the U.S. has always been kind of brusque at the border, letting in people from the southern hemisphere, you know, from Central and South America. But they've gotten, under Trump, they got so unbelievably rude and holding people up. And I know this from having spoken to a family when I was out shopping one day, heard Spanish, and I thought, oh, you know, so I was chatting with them in Spanish, and the lady told me that she and her husband had bought a condo in the ski area there. And I said, that's great, you know. And she said, well, we had to sell the one in Colorado because my children love to ski there. But whenever we would go up in the last few years coming into the U.S., we were treated so badly at customs. You know, we were separated, held for hours and hours, as though we were criminals. Yeah. And so she said, her husband said, let's go where we're wanted. You know, they don't want our business. They don't want our money and they don't want our company. That's
really sad.
Yeah. And I'm sure they're not the only people that felt that way. And it's a shame because this country is a melting pot and it's what's great about it.
I know. And we used to celebrate that. And now it's, you know, there's one bill in working its way through the Florida legislature that you can't make any white kid feel bad about the history of slavery. So if you teach about slavery, have to be really careful about the snowflake's feelings because...
How do you talk about slavery and not feel horrified and sad?
Of course. You know, there's a show we watch on PBS, Finding Your Roots with Henry Louis Gates. It's great. And they trace people's roots back. And invariably, they find out... Right, it's wonderful. But they find out people, you know, their ancestors owned slaves. And every time they get there, it's like, oh, that's just horrible. You know, and he always asks, how does that make you feel? Which pisses me off because it's a stupid question.
Yeah, like, duh.
Great. Yeah. Wow. How cool. My ancestors owned human beings. No. Yeah. You know, that's part of it. That's part of our history. You teach it. And what's happening now is they're saying no teaching American history if it's going to make the white kids feel bad. What the hell? It shouldn't make them feel bad. It should make them understand that this is the history. It's not about you. It's not about making you feel bad. It's saying this is the way it was.
Exactly. You've probably seen Michael Moore's movie, the one where they Let's Invade America.
Yes, Where to Invade Next.
Right. And he talks about how Germany teaches children about the Holocaust and what happened. They don't want to brush that under the rug. They teach them about it so it doesn't happen again. They want people to know all of the parts of the history, the good and the hideous and the shameful. What's the end game here?
Here's what I think. What we need to do.
Ruby jumped off, by the way.
I know. Hi, Ruby. She's so sweet. and you got two new pups.
Oh, the red bones. Yeah, they're wild. They're huge. They're only 6 months old, but they're like giraffes.
Wow. I love Deborah's an animal lover, as you know. Okay, so anyway, now I lost my train of thought because I started thinking about Ruby. I lost it. It's about This is old age, you know. It's the
I did all the time.
They are trying to rewrite the history books to not have history in the history books. That's not what I was going to say, but it's true.
Right, we're talking about the end game.
Right. Yeah. I want to see, the Democratic Party has a lot of problems, but a big one is I'm just going to come out and say it. I'm not an ageist. I'm 62 years old. I'm perfectly, except for these memory lapses, I'm in pretty decent shape. But I hope that when I get to the point where all my mental faculties are not operating, firing and all the synapses and everything, that I can step back. I think Democratic leadership in Congress averages in the 80s. Nancy Pelosi is, I believe, 83 years old. She had said this was going to be her last term, but she just now said, never mind, I'm running again. Dianne Feinstein is like 88. Steny Hoyer, Jim Clyburn. This is leadership in the House. They are all in their 80s. Turn it over to the next generation. They're the ones who are going to be stuck with the mess we left them. Let them have a running start to fix it. This is their world, not ours anymore. Our generation and the ones before us fucked it up. Let them have a chance to fix it now. By them staying in there, Nancy Pelosi's running again. Are you fucking kidding me? Enough already. Let Pramila Jayapal be speaker. Let AOC rise and become senator.
Healthcare, if Pramila and AOC,
of course,
we can get some of these dinosaurs to just step down.
They need to go home. It's insane already, and it's not only the Democrats. You look at what's his name. I can see his face on the Republican side. The Senate, they're as old as the Democrats are. But my God, go home.
Washington. Yeah.
Right. We've got a lot of, and I see these young kids, like the Sunrise Foundation, they're the ones really pushing the Green New Deal. So many young people in their 20s and 30s are raring to go, and they're being held back because these octogenarians, people in their 80s, won't let go. Go home, be a grandparent, enjoy your time that you've got left. Let the next generation take over already. I'm astounded that they have hung on so hard and will not let the people whose future depends on what happens now take over.
It's an addiction to power is the only explanation.
Disgusting.
You know, I think they just love the power.
Yeah. So that's my thought. Chuck Schumer should go home. Let AOC take his Senate seat and become Senate, hopefully majority leader. Enough with these old people already. They had their chance and they fucked it up. So, right? Let the next generation take over. It's their turn.
It is.
That's my solution.
I think it's a good one. It's a big start. You know, let's get some, term limits might be in a way to.
Might have to be. That. You know, I'd hate to lose a Bernie
and
Sanders.
On the Supreme Court.
Court. Oh, my God. I don't even want to talk about the Supreme Court.
Yeah, no,
how
that's
we
a whole
got
other
to this.
Show.
And people, you know what? People in the chat, let me just address this. People in the chat room got mad at me, I think, yesterday because I was. Yesterday or Monday, whenever it was, because I was saying not so very kind things about Barack Obama. Barack Obama sucked as a president. Yes, there were no scandals. I'll applaud him for that. That's how it should be. Yeah. But he left us with no bench. He left us with every state or the majority of states run by Republicans. He left us in a really bad political position.
You remember 2010? It was an absolute
bloodbath. But that happens in the first. Tends to happen in the first midterm.
It was exceptionally bad.
It was exceptionally bad. And
that's when the Tea Party, who paved the way for the Trumpsters.
That's right. That's when they rose. And they rose, one, because it was a black president, God forbid, but also because Obama just, he And Joe Biden's following his lead on this front. He's like, oh, the Republicans will play ball with us. They'll come to the table. No, they won't. What don't you understand? When Mitch McConnell says my one priority is to make him a one-term president and to block every single thing he wants to do, what don't they understand? And then Joe Biden just last week says, well, I didn't expect that they would be so oppositional. Well, where the fuck were you for those 8 years?
Exactly. And you remember how there was just no negotiating talent there when he completely gave up. He was like, I'll give abortion up to get the health care bill through.
Yep.
And threw women under the bus.
Threw women under the bus. The public option, which was supposed to be there, my line back then was Obama gave it away before they even sat down at the negotiating table. Before the table was set, he bargained it away.
Bargained it away. And the whole thing with the Catholic bishops not wanting any Catholic-owned business or church-related business to have to provide birth control to women under their health care policy. Well, then let us have Medicare for all. And guess what? You can do whatever you want.
That's
you
right.
You don't have to be involved in people's medication.
Hello.
It's not your boss's business what medicines you take, and it shouldn't be. I never understood that.
You know, and this is an area where the Republicans should have been with the Democrats. Employers shouldn't have anything to do with their employees' health care. There's no reason why an employer should be involved in your health care. It's an artificial connection there. It should be completely separate. And I would think Republicans would jump at that, and they probably would have if it weren't the black Democrat proposing it. Yeah, I know. We're so screwed. My only, you know, selfishly, I think, well, I'm not going to be around much longer because I'm kind of old. And so I'm not going to be here for the worst of it. But you know what? Our kids will be. And that makes me really mad, even madder. So I want their generation to be able to take over so that they can try to fix it because we didn't.
And, you know, as far as reproductive rights, it doesn't affect me. You know, I'm 61.
Right?
I can't have any more children. I had my three children and they're all boys. I don't have daughters to be stressing about.
Oh, you've met Allison.
Caring about people other than myself, you know.
That's what it's about. Except that's not how they operate. Anyway, we could go for hours like this. And we didn't even really get to talk about things in Canada, so we'll have to do that next time. I want to hear how life is up there.
It's awesome.
You're going to have to come visit in the summer.
You must.
In the summer.
You must, yes, come in the summer. Bring a wetsuit, though, because the lake's a little chilly, but
I can do that.
It's really nice.
I bet. Deborah Newell Tornello. Find her. She's on the Facebooks, but also on the Twitters at LitBrit. And you're here in Florida now. Lovely weather. How weird is this? It was just pouring here.
For once.
I know we do, but this is weird weather for February. It doesn't usually rain here in
firewood
February.
Firewood in the courtyard. How about that?
Well, we don't have a fireplace, but anyway, Deborah, it's great to see you.
Great to see you, Nicole.
We need another, you know, another dinner, another day in Delray Beach or something soon.
Oh, yes.
So come visit.
I will. And you don't be a stranger. Come up here.
I'm going
to
try.
To come up this summer to Quebec.
I would love to. We'll try to work on that. All right. We are, we've run long. Deborah, thank you so much. Great to see you.
Thank you for having me.
Nice for Ruby to make an appearance. All right. We'll talk soon. Thank you, Deborah. I'm going to go. I'll leave you with the news. And tomorrow's Thursday, so Howie Klein will be here. Thanks for listening, everyone. Hey, try to have a good night after all that. And be thankful you're not in Florida, I guess.
There you go.
Bye.
Hang in there.
Bye.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Are those cracks in the Republican armor? The two top Republican leaders in Congress were on opposite sides on Tuesday over the Republican National Committee's resolution to censure Representatives Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger because they serve on the House Select Committee investigating the January 6th insurrection. In the text of the resolution, the party referred to the committee's investigation, quote, as, quote, a Democrat-led persecution of ordinary citizens engaged in legitimate political discourse, and accused Cheney and Kinzinger of hurting the House and the Republican Party. But Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell disagreed.
It was a violent insurrection for the purpose of trying to prevent the peaceful transfer of power after a legitimately certified election.
Just to reiterate, as some brains automatically tune out the sound of Mitch McConnell's voice, he said it was a, quote, violent insurrection aiming to prevent the peaceful transfer of power after a legitimately certified election. He also said it wasn't the Republican Party's job to single out Republican lawmakers for criticism just because they have different views on an issue. But wannabe Speaker Kevin McCarthy defended the language because, of course, he did. But anything he says should be discounted because, remember, he called it out for what it was shortly after the uprising before he denied what we all saw happen in real time.
The president bears responsibility for Wednesday's attack on Congress by mob rioters. He should have immediately denounced the mob when he saw what was unfolding. These facts require immediate action by President Trump. Accept his share of responsibility. Quell the brewing unrest. And ensure President-elect Biden is able to successfully begin his term.
Activists are working to block Republican Congressman Madison Cawthorn from running for re-election in North Carolina, arguing that he stoked violence by telling the insurrectionists it was, quote, time to fight just days before the attack. The next deadline to avoid a government shutdown over funding, February 18th, is fast approaching. So the House on Tuesday approved legislation to fund federal government agencies through March 11th and avoid a chaotic shutdown of many of Washington's operations. March 11th? Great. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention Director Dr. Rochelle Walensky said in a radio interview Tuesday that the agency has not changed its mask guidelines, urging all schools to encourage students to wear well-fitting face coverings indoors, and adding that everyone should wear masks in public indoor settings with substantial risk of coronavirus infection. She stressed that we still have 290,000 cases every single day, and our hospitalization rates are now higher than they ever were, even at the peak of the Delta surge. Her comments came as a growing number of states this week announced that they would soon be dropping indoor mask mandates now that cases driven by the Omicron variant are falling. To our Canadian neighbors to the north, stop listening to American right-wingers. Canadian self-described freedom convoy drivers have now spread their protest against COVID-19 restrictions from Ottawa to the U.S. border, where they partially blocked an auto industry supply chain lifeline connecting Windsor, Ontario with Detroit. Canadian-bound traffic across the Ambassador Bridge was shut down early Tuesday. Limited U.S.-bound traffic did get through. But protesters and idling trucks and other vehicles also blocked traffic early Tuesday at access points between Alberta and Montana. And it's not just here. Lawmakers in Australia said they feared that local Freedom Convoy-inspired protests that have continued peacefully for 8 days in Australia's capital city of Canberra could deteriorate. In the "what took you so long" category, the House of Representatives Tuesday passed the Postal Service Reform Act. It would overhaul the U.S. Postal Service's finances and allow the agency to modernize its service after 8 years of losses. The Postal Service Reform Act would require retired postal employees to enroll in Medicare when eligible and drop that previous mandate that forced the agency to cover its health care costs some 75 years in advance. Those two measures would save the Postal Service nearly $50 billion over the next decade. The U.S. Postal Service's dire financial condition has kept the agency from modernizing and prevented plans to replace the vast majority of its aging vehicle fleet with electric trucks. The bill cleared the House in a big bipartisan way, 342 to 92. It now heads to the Senate, where it's expected to be voted on by the end of next week. Then they just need to dump Louis DeJoy and bring the U.S. Postal Service back to its former glory. So, lots of breaking news this past week with revelations mounting about the former guy's frequent actions running afoul of the Presidential Records Act. While several reports detail the former guy ripping up important records while in office regularly, despite federal laws meant to preserve such documents, Republicans have remained largely silent. This hypocrisy is particularly notable after the party spent years railing against Hillary Clinton for using a private email server for government and personal business. Their silence about Trump's actions are particularly galling, especially when you go back just over 2 years to the former guy's final State of the Union speech, when Nancy Pelosi ripped up her copy of the speech. This was not an official government-protected document. It was her copy of the speech. When Donald Trump was oh so offended by the action, yeah, Trump showing that he knew what he was doing was certainly illegal, though what Nancy Pelosi did wasn't. Prosecutors in Minnesota on Tuesday charged 17-year-old Mickey Speed with second-degree murder in the case that police were investigating when they conducted a no-knock raid and shot and killed 22-year-old Amir Locke. The cops were looking for Speed, who was Locke's cousin, when they rushed into the Minneapolis apartment where Locke was sleeping on a couch. An officer fatally shot him when he grabbed a handgun. Speed now was charged with shooting and killing Otis Elder in what witnesses described as a drug deal that went bad. Locke's death has set off more protests and a Monday march on City Hall demanding that Mayor Jacob Frey fire the officer who shot Locke and the interim police chief. Frey has suspended the use of no-knock warrants in the city. Meanwhile, in a somewhat related case, the ACLU of Minnesota won a settlement agreement that includes an $825,000 award from Minnesota State Patrol in response to the Minnesota State Police attacks on journalists during the George Floyd and Dante Wright protests. Minnesota, what's going on there? And finally, from the Sunshine State, the Florida State Senate is on the verge of confirming a Surgeon General who not only participated with a group of alleged doctors claiming that ivermectin would cure COVID, but in his second confirmation hearing on Tuesday, this so-called doctor declined to disclose whether or not he's received a coronavirus vaccine. Joseph Latipo, appointed in September by Governor Ron DeSantis, has attracted national scrutiny over his close alignment with the governor in opposing COVID-19 vaccine mandates and other health policies embraced by the federal government. On Tuesday, Democrats grew visibly frustrated with Latipo, accusing him of evading questions and endangering public health through what they described as a laissez-faire approach to vaccines. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is fully listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.